This is Game Theory, a podcast about competition, strategy, and decision-making, hosted by me, Nick, and my brother, Chris. In this episode, loving what you have. More than 200 years ago, a brilliant philosopher came into a large sum of money, much larger than he'd been used to. So he did what many of us might do if we won a lottery. He spent it. He splurged on an ultra-luxurious piece of clothing. While he bought it for a special occasion, he found out that it kind of ruined all his other clothing. He found that by comparison, he didn't want to wear any of his other clothes. They were dreary and bland to him. He found himself wanting newer and nicer things to match his new taste. There was an upward spiral of gluttony and spending. The philosopher wrote about this phenomenon in an essay that called out how consumerism can taint our view of the world and our appreciation for new things. His name was Diderot. And he pointed out that if you buy a dream car, you may also want to buy a dream boat. If you buy a nice necklace, you just can't not have a nice bracelet and shoes as well. This Diderot effect can inform our decisions as well as our worldview. So today, we're escaping the upward spiral and appreciating our favorite purchases. And welcome to episode 91 of Game Theory, podcast about competition, strategy, and decision-making, hosted by the D-plus version of the Kelsey brothers, and we look like it, for sure.
That plus is really generous,
yeah,
and I'm going to stick to it.
Yeah, I run routes like Travis Kelsey, and his girlfriend is doing so well for herself now that she's finally gotten her shit together and dated a...
Is she the one that was the... Where do I know her from?
She was a big-time country singer when we were in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, huge. Like huge.
Washed?
No, she was great. She was young, and then I don't know what happened. She moved to New York like the rest of us, and then she started thinking she was smarter than the rest of us. Oop, what? That one was real. Yeah, so we're here to talk about stuff, Chris. I came to the realization last week that we really have infinite amount of episodes we could do about airlines. We could just do it theoretically forever. There's enough to talk. Airlines in the workplace could feed this show for the rest of time.
Absolutely. We have not done an episode that's true to John Henry fashion.
No, we
in
have
a little bit of time.
I have a couple thoughts, though.
There's quite a lot.
Our Friday's Dead is something that I've noticed in multiple business publications. Our Friday's Dead. What is that?
That sounds like a plot from like 30 Rock. That's like Small Businessmen Weekly wrote an article that said Friday's Dead.
Yeah, what's wrong with the vibe on Fridays? Also, I read that article from the New Yorker, is the power lunch dead? Which is like, does anyone go to a power lunch in Manhattan anymore? And then downtowns are dead. So just a lot of death is happening in the workplace.
Chili's is the new golf course.
Yeah, Chili's is the new golf course. Who wrote, where did you read that?
Small Businessman Weekly.
Oh, that was in there?
Well, it will be. I'm going to take my letter.
That was great office banter by us. It is the throes of fall, of course, as we record this. And something is happening to me in this very moment that you wouldn't believe if I told you.
That is going to take an extraordinary amount of surprise.
My home phone landline is ringing.
Stop. Why do you have that?
Wifey needs to take it for calls and stuff for emergencies. But like, we have one.
Does she work in the year 2004?
They have pagers in hospitals, so actually more like 94.
No, I guess it's more efficient. Can't download apps on a pager.
How crazy and exciting is that? It's all so exciting. I also, okay, a couple things about the show. We're back on YouTube. Had a commenter in the YouTube section just days ago, unrelated to us making the announcement that we'd be back to YouTube, say, any reason you guys stop posting shows to YouTube? And I, on behalf of the show, with the show account, responded, pure laziness.
Purely that's a solid explanation for most of what we do, I would say.
Sure. I agree completely. But today's episode is not something called the Diderot effect, which when I learned about what the Diderot effect was. I thought it was named after someone who coined the term out of a positive reason. And then we learned, we dove deeper into it. And this man has this thing named after him because he fell victim to his own thing, which is kind of crazy.
Well, yeah, it's the unfortunate case of the thing is named after you in a way that makes people think, oh, well, that guy, Diderot. That guy.
Yes. And episodes coming up.
We're going to get into this.
Yeah.
I just want to plug. If you're still listening to this and you think, yeah, Diderot effect, maybe it's not for me. I'm going to tell you right now, Denis Diderot is probably one of the most influential people that you've never heard of. I guarantee that you've used something that he brought into fashion that he kind of basically invented. I promise you've used that thing in some form or fashion. I guarantee Nick and I used it to prepare for today. Yep. And it's his most important contribution in addition to the Diderot effect. It's completely separate, super interesting. So very, very fascinating figure. So stick around if you're on the fence about this guy. Very, very important dude, even though he did not discover the Diderot effect. It was named after him by somebody else.
And the Diderot effect is kind of interesting because it's a psychological aspect of being a human and very much a part of, I mean, a lot of people's psyche, but it's really in line with what it means to be an American. So we'll talk about that. We'll get into that in just a minute. Show's coming up this fall. We're going to do a fall draft. I think that's going to come up right in the middle of autumn, which is going to be in an episode or two. We have 100th episode coming up. Should we take a crack at any preparation and planning an extravaganza, or are we just going to say, oh shit, it's the 100th episode, and then just wave to it as it flies by?
The real problem that we run into is that when you run into anniversary episodes, milestones, stuff like that, you start wanting to reflect and go back through and see how things have changed. How are they the same? What was the journey like to get from there to here? The problem that we run into is that if we do anything like that, we're going to have to go back through our catalog.
Correct.
Which not only means listening to more of us, but it also means listening to early us. And for those of you that have stuck around through that, those early episodes, you know which ones I'm talking about. The ones that get the most plays because they're at the top of the list. The ones that are not necessarily what you would call refined work. We got to go back through those because they count in that list of 100 too. So that's the real challenge. Of course, this is episode 91. So we have 9 weeks to basically get our heads right, do our research, and figure out what we're going to do to celebrate that 100th episode. Because I don't know how you can reach a milestone like that.
I also had thought maybe just for the end of the year, or which aligns with the end of semester, which again, we believe in the academic calendar in this house. I was thinking about doing a final exam where our assignment is to go back through our catalog from this calendar year. And I will ask you questions about shit that we learned and forgot. And you will ask me questions. Just go through the old episodes and be like, hey, which episode was this? Do you remember that we did that?
Do like a Trivia Master edition of the 100th episode. And just for this calendar year. So that saves us the problem of having to listen to our early crap.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. So I thought that could be
really fun.
Yeah, because you remember last year we did kind of like an end of the year, like Christmas party. I think for the Christmas party, the episode will just be like going back through the trivia of shit that we've talked about.
Well, and if my math is right, I think there are only about 9 weeks left in the calendar year. So it really...
Yeah, it'll be close.
This should be right around New Year, Christmas time. This could be like a fun episode for us.
Yeah, I think maybe we will do a end of the year, all of our catalog trivia questions and see if you remember what the Panavia intersection is.
We're gonna have to really go at this. We got to set a format. We have to have a set number of questions. There has to be a prize too. Maybe we need to consult our significant others on this and consult our power listeners. Player three, if you feel like you have listened to this show sufficiently enough, send us your suggestions. DM us, comment, like, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Let us know what topics we should make sure to cover in our own research and include as trivia questions, because I think this could be fun, and I think this could really just show how little you and I listen to each other when we're speaking at the same time on the show.
Like every now and then my brain will wander through the best episode we've ever done by far, which was the Monty Hall problem. Occasionally my brain will wander to like having to explain that to someone again and like how to win the argument. I have to win the argument again. Like I think about that. So I think that might be a fun way to wrap up the year, doing some sort of trivia show and where we test each other like a final exam to see what we've learned and totally forget. Because occasionally I'll go through our episodes and be like, oh my God, I forgot about that one.
That's a good point. Yeah. I feel like we run into some stuff. Occasionally, I feel like when we're doing the research for this, I come across something that's like, oh my God, that sounds so familiar. That's really interesting. We should do an episode on that. And then it's so familiar because I go back and look through our titles and it's like, oh yeah, we've already talked about this. We've already talked about traffic and induced demand. And the paradox of additional shortcuts. And like, oh, well, yeah, great. So we cover good stuff. We're lucky that we get to talk about interesting stuff, but I do run over the same ground repeatedly many times.
Yeah. But we have something new today based on a book you're reading. Let's get into it. The Diderot effect. So this is why you should pay attention. Who the hell is Diderot? And like we're going to go with the real names in case anybody out there is searching for a podcast about some of these complex things like Moore's Law or the Inspector Game or whatever. That's why we title the episodes what they're titled is so that people are looking for a podcast about it. But for those of you that are just here because you listen to the show all every week or whatever, this is about buying something that's super duper nice and then realizing the rest of your shit is worthless junk and then needing more nice stuff and essentially falling down the wormhole. And you're like, well, yeah, that's just being a materialistic douchebag. Not quite. It's actually significantly more complex than that. And it pretty much anyone can fall victim to. It aligns with like gambling addictions and things. So that's what the Diderot effect is in a nutshell. It's actually more complex than that. There's more going on and we're going to get into it. But let's start with this poor bastard Diderot and how this happened to him. In the 1700s, it was Catherine the Great, right? She must have been what is now Soviet Union, Prussia, Russia, right?
Yeah, Catherine the Great was Russian.
You know what she's famous for? Of many things.
Well, other than being the line, or being a line in a Bare Naked Ladies song.
Yeah, she her favorite beer was porter beer.
Was it really?
Yeah, so I think that she got some. The story is like she got it from the English, and they like it. That's why a lot of porters you buy in the store will have a portrait of her. It's like her beer.
I did not know that. Do you think that's just because they hadn't discovered IPAs yet?
Or that in Russia they drink vodka, perhaps?
Well, and there was also a dearth of food, I guess, probably. I don't know. Otherwise, why would you want to drink what amounts to a loaf of bread?
Hey, dark beer is the best. This is a Oktoberfest.
Cracking open a cold one. Nice.
Thank you.
Tis the season. You know, tis the season. Player 3, we do a lot of recordings in the morning.
Yeah.
It's hard to justify drinking whiskey at like 7 a.m. when we record some of this stuff. Right. It's a lot easier to do so when we record at night, which we're doing for this particular episode. But Nick, this guy, Denis Diderot, I'm going to do some extensive quoting here from Wikipedia, and there's a specific reason that I'm doing that. We draw from Wikipedia a lot. It's a great place, I think, to start your research on pretty much most things, and you use it as a jumping off point. But I'm going to quote directly from Wikipedia in this case because of a reason that I'll talk about later on when we get to kind of the meat of who this person was once we've discussed the effect and all that kind of stuff. So Denis Diderot, who was born on October 5th, 1713, so happy anniversary, and he died on July 31st, 1784, which, as we all know, is the birth date of one Harry James Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Diderot was a French philosopher, art critic, and writer, best known for serving as co-founder, chief editor, and contributor to the Encyclopédie, along with Jean-Laurent d'Alembert. He was a prominent figure during the Age of Enlightenment. He initially studied philosophy at a Jesuit college, then considered working in the church clergy before briefly studying law. He decided to become a writer in 1734, and his father disowned him shortly afterward. So he was a hugely, hugely influential person because of one of the early things that I said there. He was a contributor to the Encyclopédie, which is French for encyclopedia. Nick, Denis Diderot basically invented the encyclopedia.
That is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. Yeah. And you mentioned I'm reading a book about this. It's a really fascinating book. I'll talk a little bit more about him later on, but he lived in a period of time when categorizing and collecting and organizing and kind of getting knowledge in a standardized format was kind of the order of the day, that 18th century. So he was a very important figure in that, and his contribution for the encyclopedia was critically important. But the key piece for us for today, for the Diderot effect, was his decision in 1734 to become a writer. His father disowned him, which, okay, fine. I guess some people think letters aren't important. I don't really know what exactly the reason for that was.
I'm sure it was something like that. He wanted to go in the clergy or the military, so that was big in the 1700s. It was kind of scholarly stuff was kind of shameful for the working class.
Well, and it was a little bit limited too. I mean, you can't really do that kind of intellectual work unless you are in a position as like a legal expert or for most people like the clergy. Mm-hmm. But the Diderot effect came from this essay that Diderot wrote, and it's called "Regrets on Parting with My Old Dressing Gown." He had this, I don't know, he had just like a dressing gown. I guess people figured out that fashion can change over time. And I don't really know why people had dressing gowns. I know there are people out there who watch like YouTube videos on that sort of thing on why people have like dressing gowns and what that meant for fashion. But the Diderot effect comes from this essay that Denis Diderot wrote about getting rid of his old dressing gown and buying a new one. So the story goes that he was 52 years old. And his daughter was about to be married, but he couldn't afford to pay the dowry because he had lived his life in this bohemian lifestyle in the 1740s and 50s. And so he didn't have a ton of money. But his name was very well known because of his contributions to the intellectual scene during the Enlightenment and because of his extensive intellectual work on writing the Encyclopedia. And his name was so widespread across the continent that Catherine the Great, Empress of Russia, heard about this upcoming wedding, and she heard about his plight, and she offered to basically fund his dowry to the tune of something what would be like over $50,000 today, equivalent money. And in exchange for that, she would buy like his library of works that he had both collected and wrote. And this was in 1765. So this was years after he had been a writer for decades. And so his daughter's getting married in 1765. Catherine the Great buys his library. He gets to the tune of $50,000. And so suddenly he has a bunch of money. And shortly after that sale, that dowry, so now he can finance his daughter's wedding, but now he has a bunch of extra spending money. And to, I guess, celebrate or make use of the money or try to elevate his station, Diderot used some money to buy a brand new, deep scarlet-colored dressing gown. And apparently that really just made him morose instead of satisfied and happy. And it became a symbol of, I guess, longing rather than a symbol of success.
Yeah. So that's where this starts, right? You got Catherine the Great. She's like, and they became friends, and that's kind of an interesting read as well. These kings and queens are always so bored, and ruling actually seems significantly more like the high stakes decisions, but they seem to be incredibly bored and lonely when you like read their letters and things. But so they're friends, Diderot, and he has this observation that like, I have this, and he just becomes kind of guilt stricken with it. Down the road, people observed this exact same thing sort of happening. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was around post-World War II America when people start to observe there's this attitude of keeping up with the Joneses. So like in present day, having the Diderot effect would be like wanting to do what he did. Go to a wedding, you buy a nice piece of clothing, and then you're like, also, I want a ring. Also, I want this. Also, I want this. Also, I want that. And then before you know it, you have no appreciation for your stuff, the people around you, your experiences in life. You just start collecting shit that's nicer and nicer. It becomes an upward spiral of spending and stuff and a downward spiral of satisfaction.
Yeah, that's exactly what the description is. I mean, there's a succinct way. I mean, you could define this in any number of ways, but you've captured exactly the spirit. I'm going to quote here from a site called Becoming Minimalist. This is a little article written by Joshua Becker about understanding the Diderot effect and how to overcome it. The simplest description of the Diderot effect is the introduction of a new possession into a consumer's existence will often result in a process of spiraling consumption. So rather than overcoming a milestone or passing a barrier or whatever, rather than an achievement, suddenly new purchases, especially big purchases, start to kind of look like responsibilities. So let's give an example. When you're keeping up, whether it's keeping up with the Joneses or what other factors are at play, consider that you buy a new car. You got a new car recently.
Sure, I did. And it's really, honestly, we're going to get into some personal examples that I'm going through right now that I think is a fun thing to talk about. But I got one. It is a dream car for me. I literally would not rather have another car on planet Earth.
So let me ask you this. Have you washed that car?
No, but the dealership did because they owed me a free one and I didn't get it washed on the night that I got it because it was raining. So I did on the way out of town one time.
So you've already gotten a free wash. You plan to wash it again, I imagine.
Eventually, yeah. It is a truck, so perhaps. I do treat it like a truck. I'm more cognizant of washing the inside. That matters to
you
me.
Pay, so you pay... So do you spend money on any products?
Not yet, but I do spend... I do spend money on some stuff. Yeah, I've got a little... Some wipes and some things, yeah.
That's an electric. Is that gas-free or...
100%
electric gas?
100% of the electric gas. 100% electric.
Is the electricity free?
No.
Yeah, so you got to pay for that. Yeah. I'd imagine you have insurance on that in the great state of Tennessee.
Correct. And North Carolina still, actually.
For That's right. Like when you were... When you were moving into your new domicile, mm-hmm. did you consider the availability of parking spaces, whether be it in a garage or outdoors, when you yeah. were looking for new places to move?
So because of the electricity thing, had to be in a garage or a car park that we could then do electricity outside or inside, yeah.
Now, in most major cities in America and in a lot of small towns, parking is not infinite.
Yeah,
there are a lot of parking lots and there's a lot of street parking, but it's often not free. Do you pay for any parking passes, whether that's at the downtown scene or does your wife need a parking
Occasionally,
pass?
Occasionally, it's by the hour. I would say I pay by the hour when I do need it, yeah.
So you do pay for parking?
Yeah, eventually.
So
yeah.
So basically, the point here is that the purchase of this automobile, which you needed, it's a big purchase, it's a huge investment. It's resulted in additional expenses for general upkeep for niceness.
Yep.
It's resulted in additional costs for buying the fuel, in your case, electricity. It's resulted in additional costs for what your house or home has to look like. It has Correct. To accommodate this purchase that you've made.
And it impacted the home buying process in a huge way. Like, there's like one of those things that became a must-have deal breaker kind of thing.
Absolutely. You have to buy insurance on this thing.
Yep.
You have to make sure that you're able to park wherever you need to. And so this one large purchase suddenly became for you a series of ongoing expenses. It wasn't like, all right, we've got the purchase done, we're done.
Yeah.
Okay, but what about a different example? Cars kind of make sense because it's something that you use very often. It's everyone knows, okay, cars are expensive to upkeep. That's a silly example. What about something simpler? Like, you're trying to furnish a home now, right?
Yeah, but almost there, as you can tell from the bed frame behind me.
No, it looks really good. It's a great background.
Looks good on you, though.
Can't wait to see this on YouTube. Yeah, no, it looks great. You install that bed frame, you get a free bowl of soup or what? Mm-hmm. So you're trying to furnish your home. Have you bought a couch yet?
Yes, have a couch and a love seat, a matching set.
Oh, they're a matching set. Great. Mm-hmm. Did you buy them at the same time or did you buy one and then the other?
Well, we bought them at the same time and then there are also chairs that are in the process of being made. So it was a whole day at the furniture store that was super fun.
So you're buying several things. You're not just buying a couch so that you and the other occupant of your home can sit down and enjoy your evenings. You're furnishing an entire room.
Yeah, correct.
You gotta have a design aesthetic for the house. I mean, this is a major career moment for one of you.
And although we all sat in the chairs and decided that one of them was significantly more comfortable, it was decided by the team that the other one had a better aesthetic for the room and that the most comfortable wasn't as important as the second most comfortable because of the aesthetic. However, the upholstery was incorrect and we needed to order it from Texas so that they could put the correct color on the second most comfortable chair.
Okay, so you made a purchase, which bravo to you for
thank you
for compromising. It's like, well, it's like I used to tell people, I didn't really want a cat, and my lovely partner wanted a cat, so we compromised and got a cat.
It's
a little bit like that. But in your case, so the Diderot effect that you had was, okay, you need to furnish a room. You got to buy a couch. Okay, well, if you're going to buy a couch, you got to buy matching chairs. You got to buy a matching mm-hmm. sofa. Then right. all of a sudden, like, well, you know, if you were refurnishing, for example, if your tastes change and you decide, well, you know, maybe I want a lighter color on the couch. Suddenly the dark wood on your tables doesn't look so good. Suddenly right. that old rug that you have there, like, yeah, it doesn't quite fit. We got to replace that. Then, well, you know, this TV is looking a little bit dated and I want to put it in a different place. So I got to get a stand for that and I got to put it down lower and I got to get it thinner and blah, blah, blah. The point is that this purchase that you've made, this major piece of furniture that you probably spend hundreds or possibly even thousands of dollars on, you have to buy a lot of other stuff to kind of go with it. And yep. you're developing this lifestyle. And so what basically happened for Diderot was kind of exactly the same thing. And this is like a fictional story. He, in Regrets on Parting with My Old Dressing Gown, He receives a new elegant dressing gown from his friend, which is just like a nice, you know, it's like a nice gift from the friend. But on receiving the gown, Diderot notices that all of his other possessions are looking pretty shabby. They're looking a little faded, a little old, a little worn. He says, well, okay, you know, I need to replace this and that. So now that I have this nice dressing gown, maybe I'll get a nice dressing cap for the evening. Maybe I'll get a nicer pair of footwear. Maybe I'll get some nicer clothes to look my best during the day. Maybe I'll start to replace my bedding so that it looks a little bit fresher and cleaner. I don't know. Maybe my art on the walls is looking a little bit old and dated. So by the end of the story, the key line from this is that by the end of the story, Diderot writes, I was absolute master of my old dressing gown, but I've become a slave to my new one.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way to think about it. I know that you and I, you don't really use TikTok, which means your algorithm, like we've said, for whatever reason, the American companies can't copy-paste the algorithm for whatever reason, and it's just not quite as good on YouTube and Instagram. On my TikTok, I have occasionally dabbled in what's known as Bama Rush Talk, or Bama Rush. Now,
Bama Rush,
the Bama Rush is
very
just
popular.
It's been just documenting people going through Rush, and people are fascinated by it for a number of reasons. Some people like to live vicariously through the girls and think it's kind of fun or exciting. These people maybe didn't go to a college in the South with huge Greek life culture, and other people like to kind of thumb their noses at these girls and their parents and the stupidity of this culture. And then there are some academics who are like, this is actually sexism, and everyone's like, save it for your thesis, loser. And it's yeah, I don't like those people.
The backlash to the backlash.
Right, everything. So it was like, well, what we're actually doing, it's the matriarchy versus the patriarchy. Shut up. I don't vote on tenure. So, but this year in Bama Rush, well, there's one account that would find these girls do get ready with me videos. And if you're not familiar with those are, it's just like mostly women, some men, but mostly women getting ready for a date or getting ready for brunch or getting ready to go out or whatever, right? They're getting ready for their different Rush events. So while you rush, you'll go to like a cocktail hour and you meet the girls at the sorority, and then you kind of, it's like a date, and then do you like them, they like you, and then you rank it, and it's the exact same rank list which we did from our medical match day episode a year and a half ago. It's basically the same process, same algorithm. So this year there was an account that was breaking down the Get Ready With Me videos and finding the exact stuff from like Amazon and or whatever stores they were getting it from. There's like my
like the specific
top
cosmetic products, like this is the exact bag and this is the exact compact that you have.
Correct. And some girls were like, my ring is David Muir, my bag is Louis Vuitton. And these guys are like, yeah, that's cool. That's a $20,000 outfit this chick has on. And it was just like crazy. And you're like, well, if she has a David Muir ring on, then I have to have a David Muir ring on. And eventually you, the sorority person, is not even influenced by people on the outside. You're just like, well, my ring stands out because it's from Claire's in the mall. I have to get this designer jewelry ring. It's just up and up and up and up and up. And these outfits have absolutely no bearing in reality, right? Like, it's just a complete fabrication of what, like, this started with this is my nice top. But the nice top stands out so much that you're like, I need the ring, I need the shoes, I need the bag, I need the hair stuff, I need the necklace. And all of a sudden, you have one outfit for one event and one rush at one school is worth $20,000.
Yeah, it really does speak to, like, people's desire to be or appear put together or have cohesion in whatever their aesthetic choices are. I think that's a significant factor that I often underrate. It's like, well, you know, if I bought a bed just recently, and it's like, oh yeah, right, I got a bed. Well, it's a different size of bed than the last bed I had. So now all of a sudden I got to buy sheets. Well, okay, the sheets that I had before are fine, but yeah, maybe we can upgrade the color. And now I got to start buying pillows too, because the pillows I had before are not the right size for the mattress that I have. Well, now I got to get a new bedspread. This is a chance for me to buy a new duvet cover. Like, but the color of the duvet, it doesn't really go with the room. So maybe I got to start thinking about re-wallpapering the room. It's this interconnectedness of all of the physical possessions that you have. And if you're not keenly aware of that, and if you're not mindful of everything that you have going on, you could easily fall into the trap of thinking that you're going to incur one set of costs one individual cost when it's really going to be a whole set of costs that are really high. And you know, Nick, I wonder I wonder if there's like a gender component to this, because I just learned about this. I'll be completely honest with you. I was reading a book, which I'll talk about a little bit later right here. And I wanted to know more about this guy. He was just really interesting. So I just started with a Google, and the autocorrect function on my phone filled in Diderot effect. And that's how we got this episode. So shout out to the internet. The algorithm worked. But I was just looking this guy up, and I wonder if, you know, I don't know if everybody is like a student of the 18th century and could easily point to the Diderot effect. In fact, actually, the Diderot effect was coined at a specific time in a specific place. I'll mention that here in a second. But even if you can't name this thing after like the same guy, I wonder if there's a gender component to this where you and I, as boring white guys, are less kind of aware of this tendency, this trend, than would be somebody who, like, I don't know, participates in Bama Rush. Maybe that's just not part of our day-to-day life, because as solid 3 is 3.5 out of 10, we don't really have to worry as much about being perceived visually or as like a representative of an aesthetique. So I wonder if like the ladies out there are more keenly aware of that. Like, oh yeah, well, if you're going to wear this handbag, then you absolutely have to wear this kind of shoes. Otherwise, you're just going to look foolish.
Well, Chris, it's funny that you say that, because you are right and you're wrong. I think that you are right in that perhaps it's sounds different. Right. You are wrong in that you think that there's a gender component at all. So I'm reading this this article by this guy, and I'm going to read the title of this to you. It's pretty spectacular. And it's going to be a great example for why, the Diderot effect has impacted you. It's called Yu-Gi-Oh! And the Diderot effect. So let me ask you, Chris.
Oh, no.
You ever built a deck of Pokemon cards to play competitively and thought, you know, I have this Feraligatr, but I would like the Feraligatr that matches the other cards in the set. And, you know, I have sleeves. But if I'm going to get a nice Feraligatr, I should probably get the better sleeves. And you know, while we're at it, why am I using this old coin? Why not get the good coin for my Feraligatr deck? And you know, maybe Feraligatr isn't the best card in the deck. Maybe we also need a Blastoise. But I don't want a non-foil Blastoise. But the foil ones are $40. But you know, I got the sleeves and I got the matching Feraligatr. I'm going to get the Blastoise and the coin. And honestly, the sleeves aren't protective enough when I travel to the event to play the Pokemon cards. So I'm going to order on Amazon.com a card-carrying case that looks like a tackle box to make sure that the cards that are in a mini case that are in sleeves, the Feraligatr and the Blastoise are safe and they don't die. So yeah, perhaps there is a gender effect, but perhaps there fucking isn't. That hit a little close to home there, bud. Just a wee bit.
I need to... That hurts. I can't believe you put me on blast like that.
Well, this guy...
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. That's a crazy thing. So I went to a Pokemon tournament.
I know.
In the year of our Lord, 21 and 20.
Oh, wow. Recently.
Yeah, it was in Baltimore. Baltimore wow. Pokecon. Shout out to Baltimore Pokecon. It was exactly what you think. It was an absolute nightmare of social awareness, I guess. But that said, it was a fun time. Everybody there was generally nice, if not entirely washed. But the focus of the event was you could go and play with like vintage cards. So you and I kind of grew out of that in the, I don't know, 7th, 8th grade, whatever.
Right.
And like we didn't follow along. We left when they were like, you know, they're coming out with the third generation and now there are like 9 generations of Pokemon. So we kind of fell off of that. But it turns out that there's a huge demand not only for the value of these old vintage like children's playthings, but there's a demand to play, and you can find people to do that. And there was this tournament at Baltimore that was just like, hey, you can only use old cards from a specific time in the Pokemon lexicon. And so I participated in it, and it was kind of fun. But I went there with a guy who did not fall off the bandwagon. This is a guy who stuck with the franchise, who knows all, I think there's over 1,000 Pokemon now. He knows every single one of them. He knows all the details about how much the cards are worth. He knows about different release dates and different factory defects and first editions and all kinds of stuff. And this dude, you know, he lent me a bunch of, you know, nice sleeves so my crappy old cards look nice. But he had a full organized deck of all cards of the same quality, all pristine, all vintage. This dude had, for those of you who play Pokemon out there, you know you need like 30 or so energy cards in a deck to make it work. This dude had every single energy card in all of the 4 decks that he brought with him. all of the energies were holographic. Like the whole card was like a holographic energy. And I had never seen that before. And I was like, okay, well, I'm out of my depth here. And mm-hmm. you're never going to guess who won the whole tournament, by the way. You're never going to guess.
Was it the guy with all the stuff?
You damn right it was. So, okay. Now that you've embarrassed me in front of like six people.
It's not just you, man. Because it's not. I mean, I lived with, I mean, these are women, so it's a gender thing, I suppose. But they were Division I athletes. And if you think for a second the headband on Division I soccer players isn't going to be as nice as the cleats on Division I soccer players isn't going to be as nice as their wristbands, you're tripping. If you think those haircuts that those soccer dudes are running around aren't like $700, you're tripping. Everything up and up and up and up and up. How can I have a weakness in my outfit? How can I have a weakness in my Pokemon deck? You can't.
No, you really can't. Well, and you know, we're talking about stuff that's like for fun, for hobbies. We talk about necessary stuff like you gotta have furniture in your home. Like you need shelter. That's like the basic need, but you have to have like a place to sit down and relax. Like you can't just have an empty shell of an apartment and call it good. Bachelors, if you're in your 20s and single and listening to this and your home is like that, you need to figure it out. This is your wake-up call.
But maybe they have it figured out. That's the opposite of the Diderot effect. Like I just want a lawn chair and a TV so I can watch my football.
but what I'm getting at here is like, what about stuff that's like more necessary? So
yeah,
everybody's got to eat. Every single person needs to consume calories to survive. So when it comes to cooking, we might as well make this necessary part of our lives enjoyable. A buddy of mine just got a meat smoker. He's living my dream. I do not live in a place that is conducive to possessing a meat smoker. I cannot use a meat smoker because I don't have access to the outdoor. Like, I don't have a yard. So I am very envious of... I'm not envious. I'm jealous. And envy is like where you wish people bad because they have what you want. And jealousy is like, I want what they have. I'm jealous of this. But that's come with its own set of costs because a smoker requires fuel. A smoker requires cleaning materials. A smoker requires like grilling tools. And a smoker requires meat in order to be functional. You have to have stuff to put in there to smoke. So it's like a continual process of buying new things to make use of the thing. And so it's not just like, okay, your vibe is going to cost a lot more than you think. Or your car is going to be more expensive to maintain and keep at your place than you think. It's a variety of factors or a variety of parts of your life that involve any kind of consumption. They're all subject to the Diderot effect where one purchase results in a spiral of consumption rather than an end point of like, okay, I've achieved what I want to achieve. I've purchased what I want to purchase. I've met my goal. It's something to be wary of. It's like a slippery slope of basically buying things.
Yeah. And okay, so that's true. However, I think that there are ways to get out of it, and we'll get into the ways to get out of it because I also want to pitch you something. I have been toying around with starting a cooking YouTube channel, and but I'm aware that I shouldn't be doing that for most people. However, I wanted to start something when I set out on my own. When I moved across country for my first job in the big city and I was making like $40,000 a year and poor, I was like, this is actually, I can't go to Target and drop $250 on cookware. Sorry, I have a pot and a pan and that's enough. And I want to start a channel. I was going to call it Cooking for Assholes, which is just targeted at me at 24, 25, and 26. Like, this is how you cook. This is where you should spend your money. This is how you cut corners. Get a wooden spoon. You can, honestly, a cast iron skillet makes a ton of sense because you can do most things in a cast iron skillet if you can afford it. Like that kind of stuff. Like I was thinking about doing that exact thing because, I mean, I get such guilt. I'm so guilty when I make an advanced recipe. I'm like, well, I have all of the tools to make this, but 26-year-old me couldn't attempt this. I don't have the shit necessary. I didn't to pull a recipe like this off. And I can. The kitchenware is a great example of the Diderot effect. You're like, if I'm going to get a skillet, I need a pot and I need a thing and I need a Dutch oven and I need more scoops and I need cooling pads and I need all this and then I need a bigger stove. Yeah, so I have thought about that. I think there's a market for that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And Nick, I actually think you're getting at something that is kind of, so we're talking about kind of costs of stuff that is optional, that is luxury, that is, It's not like essential to survive, but I do think it's important for us if we're going to talk about the Diderot effect and the spiraling additional costs. I think it's important for us to talk about the cost of poverty. So your example was fine because we're very fortunate people and we had a safety net where it's like, okay, I can't go out and buy all this expensive stuff at Target because I don't have the space, I don't have the money, I can learn to cook. I think that's a useful set of skills to know. But it is very real that poverty costs a lot of money. It's very, it's very weird. Difficult.
It's very kind of a strange and thing.
It is. And the thing that I think makes it that way, or one of the primary drivers, is this Diderot effect that, like, once you buy something, you have to continue buying things. And so I'm looking here now from a site called Mercy Housing. Mercy Housing is an organization. They wrote this article called Six Ways Being Poor is Expensive. And there are six examples listed here that I think are really important day-to-day examples of basically like the Diderot effect. So we'll just list a couple here. Getting places is very expensive. So if you're going to go to the grocery store, if you're going to go to your job, if you're going to go to a doctor's appointment, if you're going to go to pick your kids up and take them somewhere else, you have to physically get somewhere else. So the annual income of somebody who's working for $7.25 an hour translates to about $15,000 a year. But with that salary, it's very, very difficult to afford the spiraling costs of a car and gas and insurance and whatever else. It's very difficult to afford reliable public transportation, not to mention the time that it takes to use public transportation over and above what a car takes, which is generally much shorter. So on average, according to this website, it costs $8,558 per year to own a car. That's for registration. That's for insurance. That's for gas money. That's for tires. That's for maintenance. That's for all this other kind of stuff. Over almost $9,000 a year, $8,500 a year it costs to own a car. It's just really crazy expensive. Another example when it hits right at what your potential future YouTube channel is. I don't know.
We'll I'm telling you, offline. I think it's a good idea. Yeah, I think
we'll circle back to that offline.
Great.
But one of the examples that this site lists of one of the ways that poverty is expensive: feeding your family. They say 35 million Americans last year experienced hunger, like significant hunger. And COVID-19 made things worse. People experienced a ton of food insecurity in 2020 because all the stuff that we normally rely on to circulate food and make it accessible and make it cheap and allow people to access the food they need, a lot of that stuff shut down in 2020. And that includes 18 million kids.
Yeah.
Great, which it just costs a lot of money. And you know, you're right. So like the Diderot effect plays in where, well, you can't just go to the store and buy a bunch of ingredients. Like you have to like feed children. You have to prepare meals. You have to take time. Yeah. You have to have a stove and you have to have like cookware and you have to have plates and you have to have all this kind of stuff. There are just so many more costs associated with buying things than what you think. And we won't go into the rest of these in great detail, just to say, like, the dark side of this effect is that it's not just like, oh well, whoopsie, I got carried away with my home decoration. It's no, really, there are many more costs than you think to get by in this life. So the other ones that this site lists here are banking. It costs a lot of money. Like you can't really save money if you don't have a lot of money. It's difficult to do, and it's hard to dig yourself out of a hole if you have to keep using everything that you have to stay afloat. Childcare, another example. Getting an education.
That's a big one.
Very hard to get an education. And putting a roof over your head. So it's all these things have a lot of costs associated with them that stack up in a significant way. And so when you consider like, well, you know, this or that is really cheap. I don't understand why more people don't just get a cheap car. You don't need a nice car. People
No, the opposite. Save for a good one because you're going to have to pay for it. The cheap one's going to shit the bed.
Right. So to get by, people have to account for far more than the cost of a cheap car.
No question.
And so, so that's why I think before we get into like there's some kind of ways that personally you can get around the Diderot effect. I mean, it's hard to change the fact that things cost money and it costs money to upkeep. And I have a thought on that too, by the way. But before we get into the kind of solutions to the Diderot effect, I do want to say that it's important to treat this with empathy. Like we talk about lighthearted stuff like Bama Rush. Like I think the stakes there are generally pretty low. But it's important to be empathetic and understand like, well, you know, maybe people make purchases that seem to me to be nonsensical or extraneous or useless when in fact, like, well, you know, this could be actually a difficult set of circumstances that's resulting in something that looks like a choice that I wouldn't make, but that might make sense for somebody else in their different circumstances. So just calling for some empathy here.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think, so let's get into how to get out of this and prevent this from happening. The first one is just to be disciplined and understand that you could upgrade things one at a time and you can have appreciation for one thing. Because I know one of the great things that our parents did was in Pokemon cards and in, like, when we were young, they didn't give us stuff. They never said, I think the brilliant thing that Dale and Reddit is, they would buy us books anytime. That was like, we could get books anytime. Like but for things like Pokemon cards and toys, it was like, once every couple of months, it seemed like I would go to Walmart. We would go on the Walmart on the weekends and I would find the toy that I wanted. I would stare at it and I would hold it. And then I'd be like, can I get it? And they'd be like, no. And it would be like that for like a month or two or 3 months. And then I could get it. And then I got it and I had it and I used it and I used it till I broke it. Right. I got use out of it.
Yep.
As an adult, I think the same thing is important. Yes. As an adult, I think the same thing is true where you're like, I got this new thing. Like I have this audio recording equipment that I've had for years. And when it took a long time for me to muster up the courage to pay for it, but then the way in which it fell to me is legally fine. But the company just forgot that they had it, which is fine now. The statute of limitations on that has long expired. But
we are not giving legal advice to anybody who is similarly in possession of audio recording equipment.
If you save up for something and go one at a time, your appreciation for that thing, you said you were upgrading your bed, you got a new bed and you think about, let's get a new bed. If you think about it for a long time and you make a big decision, it is possible just to be like, oh man, the bed is great. I'm super excited for my new bed. And like, I would like all this other stuff, but the bed part, I sleep in it every day and it is the best. Or like when I would get a new cooking utensil, like I can think of the things I can make now that I have a really cool knife.
Yeah. Like you're gonna be able to prepare things in batch. So you're gonna have to spend less time cooking, which means more time hustling on that grind set.
Right.
So yeah, just like a little bit of personal discipline and being aware of what your decisions are. Another example that this comes from a website, jamesclear.com, who wrote it. Mm-hmm. It had an interesting write-up about the Diderot effect, which I think is pretty neat.
Yeah,
it's written by James Clear, who's a behavioral psychologist. One of the suggestions that he has is to reduce exposure. So you can avoid like habit triggers when it comes to purchases, which is to say like you stop spending as much time maybe looking at like advertisements. He suggests unsubscribing from commercial emails. That takes a little bit of time, but not a lot of time. He says also, meet friends or hang out in places that don't require you to spend money. Instead of going to the shopping mall, go hang out at the park. And, I do think there's something to be said for, I'm very spoiled to live in a place where if I don't want to spend money for entertainment, I don't really have to because there's a bunch of free museums. But there is a little bit of difficulty because many, many public spaces now require, basically, like they're there for people to spend money. The mall is there for people to buy things. But one of the suggestions that James has for this is just reduce your exposure to purchases. Like if you don't need to buy things, don't go to places where you're going to be incentivized or encouraged to spend money. And then the costs won't spiral out of control.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Obviously, in America, where the American dream is alive and well, it's so easy to spend money on stuff. But people who are marginalized as it is, I'm specifically thinking, I'm also on Black TikTok quite a bit, and where it's white people and Black people interacting about your different life experiences. And usually there's a comedic effect, but I've seen TikToks from Black creators on this exact effect with like, yo, this is just hanging out. Like, of course, you're not going to go, we're not going to buy. We're not going to waste money on that. Absolutely not. We're not going to the mall. If we go to the mall, we're going to hang out like this. If you think of yourself like, I can't afford the new duvet, then it's very simple to just appreciate the bed. And like, oh, it took a long time to save for this bed. And I'm super excited about the bed.
If I can't afford the duvet, I say, okay, I'm not going to go shop online at Bed Bath & Beyond, RIP. I'm not going to go to the mall and go to like look at all the bedding and furniture stores. Like I'm going to spend my time looking at other things that I can't afford or spend time doing things that don't require me to make purchases.
Right.
Exactly. Another one from, this is from becomingminimalist.com, which of course, as you would expect, is a site that's dedicated to
what's it about, Chris? What's the site about?
Well, it's about becoming a minimalist. This is a piece written by Joshua Becker about the Diderot effect. One of the suggestions that he have that I think is pretty useful and It sounds a little bit hokey, but I think it's important to remember. Remind yourself that your possessions don't define you.
How about that?
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
I will say,
your status as a person is, it doesn't have to be connected to the things you can buy and whatever else. And I know consumerist culture it kind of encourages that. But like, okay, do you remember what I said about airports the other day and air travel when we were talking about the Delta episode? About the
all of it, no. Much of it, yes. What
do you remember what I said about airports being a romantic place?
Yeah, how you can like literally like it's crazy how the craziest thing is when you fly from one climate to another and you're like, dude, I have to bring a coat or not a coat for half of this trip. That's crazy.
Yeah, like your Galileo inertial frame of reference changes. You step out of a crowded room with a bunch of like crappy food stands and public restrooms. You stand in a tube for 3 hours and you emerge on the other side in like a tropical paradise. It's crazy. But I'm gonna say something similar about what we've been talking about here, and I can just hear. I want to shout out to my buddy Rich. I can just hear this guy saying, "Well, you're just being a capitalist stooge now." But just bear with me for a second. As much danger as there is in spiraling consumption, as much difficulty as people face who have to deal with mounting costs because of their financial situation, as difficult as that is, I do think it's worth just like kind of taking a moment to reflect here on the fact that we are physical beings that inhabit a world that requires us to interact with like material objects. We need food, clothing, and like we need physical things to propagate our existence here. So like I do think it says something about our relationship with the world we inhabit that we're able to abstractify value and like what goodness means or what importance means, represent that in a quantifiable amount in the dollar or whatever currency is in the land that you inhabit, and exchange that for the physical material things that we need to keep going, or physical material things that we want to help kind of craft and refine our self-image and the way that we want to project ourselves to the other living beings that inhabit the world with us. I do think there's something a little bit romantic about commerce in that way. Not that I think, you know, we should glorify and can just like spend, buy because of, you know, my desire to profit off of other people's money. I you know, say what you want about that. But I do think that there's a little bit of, I don't know. I think there's a little bit of romance in the fact that we do have to continually sort of pay our rent, so to speak, in order to keep living in this material world where we have to eat, we have to have clothes, and we are bound by physical touch and our limitations as creatures that are made of matter. And we're able to kind of navigate our way through that in this complex system that we all sort of agree on. And that's kind of fabricated out of nothing, but it does get at this ability to relate with one another on an abstract level that translates into material goodness. I think there's just a little bit of kind of hidden romance there. And maybe I'm just channeling the spirit of Diderot and his fellow 18th century Enlightenment thinkers that were so interested in like, okay, so Nick, I've been going for a second here, but let me finish this thought on Diderot and bring it back to like this person. Mentioned earlier in the show that he was the guy who basically invented the encyclopedia. He wrote so extensively on this thing. I'm quoting from this book called From Dawn to Decadence. Here you can see it right there for those of you on YouTube. It's by Jacques Barzun, who's an historian. And he explains that Diderot wrote so much about this. The expanded work that he made involved just, I mean, volume 7. He was only on the letter G for just like all the things that he could think about to go into this encyclopedia. And this was in the age of, you know, they've just exited the 17th century and now they're going to get into this age of like scientific discovery and exploration and experimentation and categorization of information. And then he published an additional 17 volumes after that. He added 11 plates, like design, like drawing plates of like images of all the stuff that he was putting together. He completed 28 volumes of an encyclopedia by himself, going around the continent, just finding things, writing about things. And another editor later added 7 volumes from the combined work of others. So this guy did like 4 times as much as everybody else. So in 1777, the encyclopedia was finally published with 35 volumes. It was like really a magnum opus. And so I think it kind of gets at this Enlightenment spirit that we're able to use commerce to generate importance and identify and condense objects of value that mean something to us, whether that's like our continued survival or our self-image. And we're talking about this effect that talks about the interrelationships of those things. And it's named after a guy whose life as a writer was dedicated to categorizing and organizing information so that we could better understand the world that we live in.
It's kind of strange.
I know that was a lot of me just kind of yakking and kind of romanticizing, but I think there's something to be said there, and I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, the machine keeps churning. I guess it depends what part of the machine you are on. The need being there, I guess, is romantic, like depending on if you can afford it. That's the thing, is because I don't know. It's not that the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. It's that there are many fences and different shades of grass and how you look at it that particular day. And does the joy that one gets from an object override the need of that object or that thing? And like, our relationship, in my opinion, with clothing, food, and shelter should be different than our relationship with home decor and Pokemon cards. Right? Like, what are our basic needs and our wants? Like, I have this really brilliant car that I really, really like, and it's a whole process owning it, but I don't need it the way that I need clothing and shelter and food. It's a strange thing that we're doing here with this, for sure.
Have you ever heard of that story by O. Henry? It's called Mammon and the Archer.
No.
It's the story. So for those of you who have listened to it or read it, I listened to it on an audiobook not too long ago. It's about two people who are in love with each other, and this woman has beautiful hair, and she loves her hair and takes good care of it, and it's like her calling card. She has this amazing, amazing head of hair. And then this guy is like a big watch guy. He just loves his watch. He's like very, you know, it's his one prized possession. They're very poor. They're not, you know, super rich people. They're not idolizing their possessions, but, you know, they're sentimental value. There's personal identity tied up in what they're good at and what they're interested in. These are the most important things to them in their lives, which are otherwise, you know, kind of devoid of color and not really, they're not people of excess by any means. But they put so much into these material components of themselves. And the story is that they fall in love with each other and they can't really afford like an engagement, I think. And to try to fund that, the man secretly goes out and sells his watch and he tries to finance it. And he says, I'm going to give up this most important thing so that I can, you know, pay for this wedding here. And the woman goes out and donates her hair and gets money from that. And so they give up the things that mean the most to them. Right. But it's kind of ironic in a way because, you know, part of what he loves about her is her is her hair. And what he loves about her is, you know, her, I'm getting the details mixed up, but the point is that they ironically kind of, sacrifice something for the other when it ends up like not mattering at all. So that's a little bit more on like the luxury side, but, you know, on the other hand, the stuff that we need to get by, like the food, the clothing, the shelter, the transportation, all that good stuff. I mean, I think that forces us to confront our limits in a way. And I think there's even some value in that too, even though it's a little bit more serious significantly more serious. And there's a little bit more gravitas than stuff like children's toys and
accessories. Yeah, and it's just like this David Foster Wallace thing that we keep coming back to. It just requires you to be aware, because if you're not aware in your zombie mode or baseline or what do you call it, your default setting.
You
can find yourself, the default setting can be bad, and just this mindless wandering and stuff is, that's how this kind of thing can happen. Like, and then you just just run that plastic. It's so easy. I remember in college, I memorized my credit card number, and I would have Jimmy John's show up at my door when I was wasted. Like, oh yeah, I forgot I ordered that. I could just do it over the phone. But now it's just plugged in to your phone and your accounts. It's a click, click, buy with one click. Everything super easy. Buy, 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 buy. And now you have new bedroom stuff, and you're like, you're feeling some consumerism emptiness, and now you're required to take care of all this shit, and it's just never one thing. So just be aware. Have mindfulness.
It's like Michael Scott said, you have to play to win, but you also have to win to play.
What a guy.